Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, some interesting topics to talk over?
Yes, heart attacks and men. Is there a marriage effect? What do you do when you have chest pain if you're a man versus a woman? We'll talk about where marriage fits in. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about the calories on a menu in restaurants, especially in fast food restaurants. Are they accurate? Are they not accurate? And how does that affect your diet? And how does that affect your weight?
Okay, those coming up. Again, that number, 800-462-7413. Oh, and our recipe.
Yes, Carol's Summery Potato Salad. It's that time of year when we all want potato salad.
Okay, and this one from a listener.
Absolutely. It's a good recipe. You'll love it.
To the phones we go now with a listener in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call.
We appreciate it. How can we help?
Well, I have a 3-week-old baby, and I am struggling with breastfeeding. It seems that I have an inadequate milk supply and have been meeting with my physician and the baby's physician and a lactation consultant, and everyone has made a lot of recommendations, and I'm a bit confused where to go from here.
Can you tell us what those recommendations have been?
Sure. So what I've been doing is being very aggressive about feeding her every 2 hours during the day, 3 hours at night, pumping after each feeding. I've been taking herbal supplements, so mother's milk or mother's love more milk, which is fenugreek-based. My physician prescribed Reglan. The baby's physician prescribed oxytocin nasal spray. I've also been drinking special teas and trying to keep my calories and fluids up. And really, it's a lot of work. And unfortunately, without adding a bit of formula, she hasn't been able to gain the recommended ounce a day, despite mm-hmm. all of those interventions.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. And it, by the way, you're doing a lot.
I think, and I think too much.
And you've gotten a lot of advice, and I don't want to say you've gotten too much advice, but you've gotten a lot of advice, and so you're doing everything you mm-hmm. possibly can. Just a couple of things beyond that. Your child, how much does your child weigh?
6 pounds, 15 ounces, okay. Yesterday.
So 6'15", and at this point, how old did you say?
She's 19 days old.
Okay, so she's 19 days old. And how much formula are you giving her?
About 4 to 6 ounces total per day.
Is she still suckling? So she's still nursing?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, there are a couple things. So you would like to make it so she's nursing and doesn't need formula.
I would love that.
That's really what you'd like to have. There is a possibility that may happen, but it may not happen, you know, because it's the suckling response also. You're doing everything you can. But her, as she gets bigger and as she gets older and as she gets stronger, she may start to suckle harder, and that may be the thing that tips this over to the other side. And once again, it's only a possibility, but that's the thing. When she is 10 pounds or 11 pounds or 12 pounds, she may suckle differently, and that may affect your milk supply more than anything else that you're doing.
Okay.
And the real issue is early on not to be totally frazzled by this, but to figure out how to do it the right way so you can have the nurturing that is so important with breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. The bonding, the nursing, everything that goes on with breastfeeding. It's not just the milk. It's the milk and the mom together, and that's so very, very important. And what happened years ago is doctors would say, well, your milk isn't coming in, just let's use formula and forget breastfeeding. Well, we know that was the wrong thing to do completely, and that's the wrong thing for you to do. I don't think you can do anything more than you can except to get her weight up through some milk, through some supplement from formula. I think you're doing everything you can. Having the lactation specialist is really, really important. I always often recommend people go to La Leche League, which are breastfeeding moms, and they're a group. But the lactation specialist is, they're really good at this. They really know all the tricks and whistles. So what I think I would do is I wouldn't do anything more, but I would know that when your baby reaches 9 or 10 pounds, there's a good chance that your baby will suckle harder, and I would kind of relax into this. Does that make some sense?
Sure. That sounds sounds like a great idea.
But I would keep up the I would keep up the water. I would keep up the calories. Yep. And once again, it's the nursing that's going on. Even if you don't have any milk, it's the nursing, it's the bonding. We now know from studies that have gone on in Eastern Europe in orphanages where children are not nursed, but they're given adequate milk, you know, around birth, but they're treated in a factory-like situation, that we know that that at the extreme is awful. And we know, on the other hand, that the bonding that goes on between you and the baby is critical. And to get rid of the anxiety of that, I think, is one of the goals.
Yeah, congratulations on the new baby.
Yeah, thank you.
And I've got to tell you, we've talked with new moms every now and then, and in those conversations, usually, the baby joins in the conversation.
She's right here. She's actually nursing, so she's not making any noises at the moment.
So she's nursing, so she's there, not even in a virtual way, but in a real way. So.
Yeah, it was the best way I could guarantee that she wouldn't scream.
Thanks a lot for the call. I mean, right. You say that. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. It's toll free, of course. Zorba, our next listener is with us in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm 16 weeks pregnant, and I would love for you to discuss the differences between the synthetic type of prenatal vitamins that you get from Walmart or Target as compared to the natural botanical-based prenatal vitamins that you can get at the health food stores.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, a couple things about vitamins. If they say USP on the vitamin, which seems U.S. Pharmacopoeia, and what it is, it's a standard dissolution of the vitamins. So that part is very important. No matter what vitamin you buy, you want it to say USP because it meets certain standards. It's sort of like, electricity. When you plug things in, it often will say underwriters approved. There'll be a little UL on electrical things like toasters, and that means it's safe and it's not going to electrocute you. Well, this is the same with vitamins. They're not exactly going to electrocute you, but you want to make sure the vitamins are real vitamins. They're really in there, and they've really been tested. And that, to me, that's a bottom line issue. If they don't meet those standards, I don't like them. And the reason is I don't know if they're correct or not. That's number one. And that's why I like to go to consumerlab.org, which is one of my favorite websites, consumerlab.org. And it's just like the Consumer Reports, which also has a natural foods vitamin and supplement website. But Consumer Labs goes and actually tests a whole bunch of different vitamins to see if they have them and basically tests to see what they are. But if it says USP, it's good. Now, vitamins can be naturally derived. The thing about prenatal vitamins is they have two things in them that are important in addition. They have a higher amount of folic acid. They have a milligram of folic acid, also called folate. And regular vitamins have 0.4 milligrams. So if you're not getting folic acid there, you want to make sure you're getting a milligram of folic acid. And then they usually have iron. And iron, by the way, is inorganic. Iron, by definition, is not organic. Yeah. It's inorganic. So it doesn't matter where you derive it. Iron is iron is iron. So that doesn't really matter. And those are kind of the ways to look at it. You can take a natural foods vitamin, but you want to make sure it's got a milligram of folate and it's got some iron in it because that's what you need. So where do you get your vitamins?
I've been buying the gummy ones from Target,
Vitafusion.
And I'm seeing an OB and I also am seeing a midwife. And they kind of have different approaches. And
Yes. The midwife is recommending. I'm going to assume the midwife is recommending the organic vitamins, and the OB is not. I mean, I know that's a prejudiced viewpoint, but somehow I just think that's just the way that it is. So you got to look at the label, and so same with the midwife. You want to look at the label now. Now, the U.S. government a number of years ago said that white bread, junky white bread, Wonder Bread, you know, that fluffy white bread. Mm-hmm. White bread now is made with what's called enriched flour. It has been since it's actually been invented.
Yeah.
And in addition to B vitamins, it has folic acid. So in other words, they did that because the importance of folic acid in preventing birth defects, spina bifida, is critical. So it's not as if I would recommend you take an organic vitamin, but you have white bread with your bologna sandwich to get the folate. And once again, Consumer Lab www.feedingher.org. It costs $20, $20 or $25 to join it. They test a whole bunch of vitamins, and Consumer Reports also charges on their website for this. And I think it's okay to pay for information because then you know what you're going to get.
Exactly.
You know, and I go for the stuff that's been tested by an independent lab. I know it's okay then.
Thank you very much. Do you think that more botanical-based are more readily absorbed in the body?
No, not if it says USP, it meets the absorption of the U.S. pharmacopoeia. So the rest, I think, is hype, frankly.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
it's hype. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck on that baby.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, we've been helping some young moms so far. Let's talk now about husbands and heart health.
That's right. That's right. Husbands and heart health. So who do you think is more likely to go right away, call 911 when they're getting chest pain, men or women?
I would guess men.
Men. Well, married men, the answer is probably yes. So married men, I mean, that's what the article shows, are much more likely to call 911, much more likely to seek help for heart disease and so on than unmarried men.
Yeah.
But women, on the other hand, the marriage effect doesn't seem to buy much.
So they're as likely whether they're single or married.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, women are often the caregivers in the family, so they're more likely to take care of their health.
Yeah.
And men often, you know, when I have a guy in my office, you know, I often say, why are you here for your physical? That's what I always ask people, because I want to know what they want to get out of their physical exam. And 9 out of 10 times, well, maybe it's not that high, but it's pretty high, they say, well, my wife wanted me to come, or my wife made the appointment.
Yeah.
Women never say my husband wanted to come. I don't remember a woman actually ever saying that.
Yeah, that seems kind of obvious. Yeah. Is there research now to back
that? Well, there's research that actually backs it up. It shows that men who are married, this is an article that came out of a Canadian medical journal, said that men, there's really a marriage effect. They're much more likely to seek serious help when they're having a heart attack, when they're having, you know, chest pain and discomfort, if they are married than if they are not married. But if we look at other data on this, this really goes to the life space. I always like to say that young men suffer from a potentially terminal disease that I call testosterone dementia, where testosterone goes through their bloodstream and they're more likely to do wild and crazy things, you know, take risks, drive too quickly, drink and drive. And studies have shown that once they get married, men are more likely to buckle up, and they often reduce their driving speed by 5 miles per hour. When they have a kid, they reduce it often by 10 miles per hour. So this male effect of pulling them in with the marriage effect, I think really shows that it happens even later on in life in men when they have a heart attack.
Yet another reason to get married. If you're a guy.
That's right.
If you're a guy.
That's right. All right, guys, get married and stay well.
800-462-7413.
It's the marriage game.
And a listener with us now, Zorba, in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I'm wondering about the use of organic frozen vegetables in lieu of using fresh vegetables from the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using organic frozen vegetables because I can count on them being okay to use and won't come half of them be thrown in the garbage. So I'd like to know the nutritional value and what you feel about them.
Oh, sure. I want to talk a little bit about frozen vegetables, which are really a big issue. Frozen vegetables will often have a higher vitamin content than fresh veggies at the grocery store that have left on the shelf too long. That's the fascinating.
Because
they're frozen right away. And the other thing about frozen vegetables is they're not cooked nearly as long as canned vegetables because they're not canned. You know, they're frozen.
Yep.
So they've had a spot, usually a blanching, and then they're frozen in there. So frozen has more than canned, and frozen often has more than fresh because fresh often isn't as fresh as you think. Now, as for organic having more than veggies that are not organic, I don't think there's a difference in the vegetable content. I think the real difference is in the organic. The fact is it's made without, you know, without pesticides.
I noticed the flavor too.
And the flavor. So I think it's a flavor pesticide issue. It's not a vitamin issue.
Okay.
I think the vitamins are pretty much the same.
Well, it's so much easier to prepare a meal with frozen than try to chop all those vegetables and bring
absolutely
them. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for the call. Well, Zorba, before we step out for a short break, it's time to give your advice reflexes a workout during another fast-paced edition of Rapid Fire. Are you ready?
Yes. I am.
Sheila from St. Louis leads us off by wanting to know if putting her toothbrush head in the dishwasher or boiling it in hot water is as effective as the more expensive UV light sanitizer.
Absolutely. As long as she's using the toothbrush for only herself, just cleaning it with soap and water is probably good enough.
Speaking of saving money, Zorba, here's Deborah, who asks, is there another inhaler that works similar to Advair? It's a Tier 3 drug through Medicare D, and I will hit the donut hole pretty fast being on this inhaler.
Absolutely. There are a number of other inhalers. Advair is a combination of two different medicines. One of them is a generic. The other one is soon to be a generic, and you can buy them separately and save a ton of money.
What are they?
They're fluticasone and salbutamol.
Mm-hmm. Next up is Peter, a pilot from the Chicago area, who wants to add to your airline advice of taking a sleeping pill for a pleasant flight. He stresses no alcohol with Ambien. He says most of airline security issues involve Ambien and alcohol.
That's right. Alcohol and Ambien, you shouldn't mix them together because they produce a change in your memory, and sometimes you won't remember the flight at all.
Nancy steps in next, saying, I live with a health food evangelist who won't eat farm-raised salmon, insisting it be wild. Is there a negative health risk from eating farm-raised salmon?
Well, that's what everyone would really like to know because farm-raised is cheaper, but the reality is farm-raised salmon carries lots of issues with it. The wild tastes better, but it costs more money.
Amanda from Potosi, Wisconsin, wants to know your thoughts on her common sense solution. If a person could wrap their legs with ice to reduce swelling, couldn't they do the same with their stomach?
Wrap their stomach in ice
to reduce swelling.
The swelling of the stomach? Now, that would be a chilly question.
Finally, Joe from Jacksonville, Florida, wants an answer for that age-old question. He's 77 and wants to know, boxers or briefs?
Boxers.
That's it. We've worn out Zorba during this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a listener recipe coming up. Lots more of your calls. Our medical myth buster. Some more interesting research, too, here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, 1-800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but a line is open now for you. Before our next call, though, Zorba, let's get to the recipe. And this one is a listener-supplied recipe. For that, we are happy to welcome Oshkosh, Wisconsin listener Carol McDonald. Carol, hi.
Hello, gentlemen.
This one is Carol's Summery Potato Salad. How'd you come up with the idea?
Well, we belong to a CSA, and we're a CSA host pickup site for Good Earth Farm in Oakfield, Wisconsin.
Yeah, but for those who don't know, what is a CSA?
A CSA is a Community Sustainable Agriculture membership. You actually become a member of the farm, and in our case, we prepay for a season's worth of produce, and if they yield a great crop, we get a super abundant amount of fresh vegetables. And if we have some bad weather, we might miss out on a little broccoli or something because of a heat bolt, and we share in that as well.
Right. So it's a wonderful way of sort of sharing the benefits and risks of farming with the farmer.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's also local and organic. They're not certified, mm-hmm. but we know that we can pick something off a vine and just pop it into our mouth without any problems whatsoever.
Which is really great. Awesome. How long have you been a member of a CSA, a crop share?
This will be my fourth year. Mm-hmm. I actually had been looking for CSA memberships for quite a while, but there weren't any available in this area like they were in Madison years ago.
Yeah, so how did being a member of the CSA create this recipe for you?
Well, if you've ever been a member of a CSA, you know that at times you have more produce than you know what to do with. And you can either preserve it or freeze it. And in my case, I just start incorporating a lot of the abundance into my normal recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And I like potato salad. I like it a lot. But it's also fairly rich and calorie-laden, and I just decided I was going to play with what I had and lighten it up.
I think that's always a great idea. I had an aunt who always made her potato salad, which was a really good potato salad. And I still remember one year I said, "What do you put in this potato salad to make it so good?" And she said, "I never share that recipe." And I thought, well, it's pretty good potato salad. I know you use Miracle Whip and other things, but I wonder all about it. But I happen to love potato salad. Of course, I love it in the summer. I do not eat it very often in the wintertime. It's sort of a summer food. But making it better, making it taste better, making it in a fewer calories, I think, is really a good thing to
do. So let's make it.
So let's start. Okay, so start out with 4 cups potatoes. Red or Yukon Gold are what you use or whatever you get from your CSA.
Right, and I don't peel them. I just trim the bumps and the spots off of them and leave the skin on.
And then when you chop them, how small do you make them? You like a big chop or a small chop?
Bite size, like maybe a half inch by half inch.
So bite size. Half a cup of pickle juice. What do you use? Dill pickle juice or what kind of pickle juice?
I just use traditional dill pickle.
Dill pickles. Okay, so yeah. Dill pickle juice. So 1 cup of bell pepper diced, 1 cup of chopped dill pickles, and 1 cup of celery finely diced. 1 cup of each of those. Bell peppers, the greens you use, or do you use the reds?
I like to use a combination, mm-hmm. if they're available and the price is right, of the yellow, green, and orange.
I think it's great.
I generally stay away from the green pepper, especially in the summer, because it has a much stronger flavor.
It does. It does. The reds are definitely sweeter, you know, in the orange. So a cup of bell pepper, chopped
dill.
And they're pretty. And style is everything, right, Tom? Tom, we know that. Because style is everything. That's what Tom always says, don't you? Style is everything.
Okay.
That's right. Okay. 1 cup of cucumber peeled, sliced, and diced. You take the seeds out of the cucumber? Seeded?
I
kind of pull them out
always the take the seeds out of the cucumbers for a salad like this because the seed portion not only has the seed, which is a little chewy and doesn't fit in with the recipe, but the part that holds it together mm-hmm. yields so much extra liquid that take that right
That's
out.
That's right. That's it. It's kind of mushy. 1/2 cup of sweet onion finely diced. Finely
mm-hmm.
diced. And you can also use 1/3 cup, you're right here, of green onion.
Right. You know, use what's available, but, consider the strength of the onion. Sweeter, milder are better. If you're using a white or a yellow onion, use much less because mm-hmm. it's a much more potent onion flavor.
So 1 cup of low-fat mayonnaise. Do you have a favorite brand you like or do you use generic?
Well, Hellman's.
I'm a Hellman's person. They're Hellman's and there's Best. And I never buy. Do you buy generic mayonnaise, Tom? Well, that's the answer. We now know Tom's answer, which is when have I bought mayonnaise last in my refrigerator? But, I mean, I buy generic and I like things that are name brand, but I've been a Hellman's because my mom used Hellman's. I'm sure that's the reason behind it. I wonder if there ever was a Mr. Hellman, probably, or a Mrs. Hellman. 1/4 cup of low-fat milk, 1 or 2%, I assume. One to two teaspoons of dill weed, and you use dill weed, which is, if it's fresh, that's around, use it, but otherwise you use the dried dill weed?
Actually, in this case, I generally go with the dried dill weed mm-hmm. because they have 2 different flavors. And depending on if I want more fresh dill punch, mm-hmm. of course, then I can use that. Also, on the milk addition.
Uh-huh.
If you don't want to use milk, you can always use a little bit more pickle juice. But
instead
what you want to do is mix that dressing ahead of, before you put it on the potatoes, and make sure it's a lighter consistency, like a ranch salad dressing, but not too thick.
But not too thick. I think that's, I can picture that. And a half teaspoon of celery seeds. So, so let's make it. Cover the potatoes with cold water. Bring them to a boil. Cook until tender. Drain, let cool just enough so that you can handle them. Then dice the potatoes into bite-sized pieces. Place in a large, shallow bowl. Sprinkle the warm potatoes with a quarter cup of pickle juice. Add the diced veggies and gently toss to distribute. Then stir in a cup of low-fat mayonnaise with the remaining pickle juice, the low-fat milk, dill weed, and celery seed. It should be a lighter, looser dressing, like you said, than the traditional mayonnaise-based salad. So we'll keep it light, like you said, sort of like a light gravy. Pour it over the potato mixture, toss it gently to combine, and then add additional mayonnaise or pickle juice if you need to. Adjust the seasonings. You can always add a little bit more dill or a little bit more celery seed. Allow a few hours to combine and delish. Just delicious.
Sounds great.
I love it.
It's very, it's my recipe, but I must say it's very good.
It's very good. It's
my family, I don't cook with recipes, and I just kind of toss this together, and they bug the bejeevers out of me, so I finally buckled down and measured the ingredients for them. But again, it's a very light and flexible recipe. So you can add what you want, and if you don't like something, leave it out.
I love it, and I happen to like potato salad. And for me, the big thing about this recipe is not is a little bit of milk, but it's the pickle juice. And I never thought about putting pickle juice in. I love it as a concept. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I know that our listeners are going to chime in to get this recipe. Thank you
so
much.
And thank you for not being like Zorba's aunt and sharing your recipe with us.
I share all my recipes.
Good for you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And for sending us this winning recipe, Carol gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low-Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
+1 800 462 7413, our toll-free number. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Amherst, New York. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom.
How can we help?
Okay, well, a little over four years ago, I had my first totally out-of-the-blue episode of vertigo symptoms.
Ooh.
I did go for the physical therapy, the Epley maneuver and stuff, and they taught me some things to do at home because I couldn't afford all the sessions that they wanted me to go to. So I told them, you know, you've got to show me some things I can do at home because I can't, you know, the copays, I couldn't handle them. So they did, but it still happens on occasion randomly. So I just keep, they also prescribed me meclizine. So I just try to keep that in the house so that when the symptoms do occur, I have it to take.
Yeah.
And I've tried to read up on it, you know, and everything. Is there any new information out or anything like that that I should know about or whatever?
Yeah. Tell me about how it affects you. Do you just get dizzy? I shouldn't say just because that's not great. Do you black out when this happens?
No, it's just, it's sort of like all of a sudden somebody throws a switch and you're on an amusement park ride. Everything is like spinning and tilting. It's like a thrust feeling of spinning, tilting.
Right.
I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah. No, I think you described it perfectly well. We've all had that experience because as kids, we liked it. Remember, you would, don't you remember as a kid, you'd go around in a circle to see the world spin, and I thought I saw the world spinning. Well, it wasn't the world. It was my labyrinthine apparatus in my ear that was actually spinning, but I remember liking that, and as an adult, we don't like it. I've had vertigo. I think, Tom, you've had vertigo in the past.
Yeah, I have on and off through most of my life.
Yeah, so you can, you know, we can both relate to this. Let's talk a little bit about Apley's Maneuver, and we'll put our link to it, by the way, on our website, zorbapastor.org. Apley's Maneuver can easily be done at home. You don't have to have a professional do it. It's good to have somebody teach you once, but we're going to put a YouTube link on there, which really shows how Apley's Maneuver is done. And frankly, one of the things that you may want to consider doing is doing it in the morning, once when you get up in the morning, just sort of doing it almost prophylactically, and especially if this thing is coming and going. So you might, that's one way that you might deal with benign positional vertigo. And we call it benign, meaning that there's no tumor, there's nothing invading the brain, but it's not benign when it happens to you. You know, it's really a bad process, so it's really misnamed. Does the meclizine do anything for you?
Yeah, I mean, it does alleviate the symptoms. Because the first, like when I do have an episode, that first day or two is pretty rough.
Yeah, how many episodes you get in a year?
Oh, gosh. I should start keeping a calendar of it. I'm going to guess maybe three or four times, maybe like three times a year, maybe four.
Yeah, so when it comes, do you know it's going to come? Do you feel anything?
It's just like, bam.
So what do you do then? You keep the meclizine with you all the time?
Typically, though, it does happen when I haven't gotten up yet. It happens in bed before my feet even hit the
floor. What do you do? Do you do the Apley's Maneuver right away?
It's so bad I can't even tolerate dangling my head like that. I just basically make my way to the bottle of meclizine.
And then you wait until the meclizine, the antihistamine, gets in you for an hour. Unfortunately, benign positional vertigo tends to come and go. For some people, it happens on a very regular basis, and for other people, it tends to disappear over time. A couple of thoughts are, as I said, if you're getting it three times a year, doing the Apley's Maneuver every morning is going to take too much time. So that is not worth it. On the other hand, you want to write down when it happens to see if it happens during certain seasons or time of the year. Is there a seasonal occurrence?
Yes.
If you know it's allergy season and this may happen, you may just want to take a meclizine at bedtime every night.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt you. And I mean, it's not going to hurt you at all. It'll be added to the Zyrtec, and you may find the meclizine is actually going to attenuate or bring down some of these symptoms. So you may want to do that during allergy season, because if you can find a seasonal occurrence or a way that this is occurring on some sort of a regular basis, that may be helpful for you.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
And before the break, Zorba, let's log in to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and see if we can help out Martin in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Now, see if you can stay with me on this one. Martin writes, "Hey, Doc, I heard that unsweetened cocoa is good for me, so I started adding it to my oatmeal. I heard acidity is bad, so I started with a pinch of no aluminum baking soda in water after a workout."
Wait a minute, no aluminum baking soda in water?
Yeah. Hang on, there's more.
Okay.
"I heard that apple cider vinegar before bed will make your blood better. I heard that colloidal silver will ward off disease and stop infection. Is it safe to use all these in the same week, let alone day? Or do I listen to too much radio?" So do you have
it? It's clear he's listening to too much radio. That's it. Well, colloidal silver, I don't know. I don't know with colloidal silver, which is a heavy metal. I don't know if that's safe. So I worry about the colloidal
silver. Get rid of that, you'd say.
I'd get rid of the colloidal silver because I don't know if it's safe. I mean, people take all sorts of inorganic things like silver and think it's safe. Remember, we used to get mercury. I mean, we used to get mercury for syphilis and mercury for gonorrhea. Yeah. Said it was safe. Now we know mercury kills you.
Yeah.
I mean, so I would get rid of that. Baking soda, not aluminum baking soda. Well, baking soda by definition has no aluminum in it.
Okay.
So I think taking the baking soda is just fine. And as for the other stuff, hey, if it makes you feel good, no harm, no foul.
Any benefit?
Well, I don't really know, because we haven't done a study, have we, Tom?
Well, I haven't. Zorba's advice is safe to take with any medication, so send your lifestyle questions to the show in an email to
zorba@wpr.org.
We have an interesting topic to talk over. That's coming up next. More of your phone calls, too, and our medical MythBuster, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, apparently they've been doing some checking on those menus that are posted at the fast food restaurants to see if, in fact, the calories are accurate. Are they?
That's right. Yeah, and the answer actually tends to be the case. And we'll talk about where they're accurate and where they're not accurate. Mm-hmm. First of all, the idea behind putting calorie counts in restaurants is that it will actually change behavior.
Yeah.
So do you think it changes behavior?
Not a bit.
There's no proof that it actually changes behavior.
I don't believe it for a second.
Yeah. And I don't know if I don't believe it. I think it may change behavior, you know, for some people. I was shocked when I looked at the menu in Subway and found that the tuna sandwich tended to be the most caloric sandwich on the menu, you know, and that the roast beef sandwich was the least caloric, but it was the mayo, obviously, and the tuna.
Well, I'm ashamed to admit to the public radio audience, although everybody knows it by now anyway, that I do some fast food eating.
You do some fast food eating? Uh-huh. Okay.
And I have
some lightly.
I've never even seen a menu.
Yeah, that's right. No. But these are going to be, these are based on some things that are occurring in New York, for instance, where the menus have to be stated with the calorie count. I think it's going to help people with choices when they actually want to make a difference and change. Now, what was interesting about this is which restaurants on the whole do you think were more accurate, the fast food restaurants or the sit-down restaurants?
Oh.
In terms of the accuracy of how many calories are in this particular
dish.
Well,
since you're asking me the question, I think I know the answer, but I would kind of guess that the sit-down restaurants, but I'm
would be more accurate. Not at all. It turns out it's the fast food restaurants. And the reason is they have, it's mechanized industrial food, right? A fast food restaurant is mechanized and industrial. You know, when you go to Subway, it's a set amount of this and a set amount of that. When you go to McDonald's, it's mechanized industrial food because it costs more money if they add an ounce more or 2 ounces
it's
more.
It's not as though the hamburger tastes any different or is any different from one
that's right.
To the next.
That's right. But it's the same exact burger because they do it in the same exact way. Whereas in a sit-down restaurant, they're looking at portion sizes. Yeah. There's a chef who does it. And so the chef in the morning might do it different from the fast cook in the afternoon. So that was one thing that was the case. You know, if you read the menu and you're looking at the calories, you still have to use your brain to see whether or not it makes sense. And the other aspect about this was the fact that even though there were some differences on the menu, I think it's going to allow you to make, you know, to make better choices. So once again, you don't think it's going to make any difference at all for people?
Well, I don't think so.
I think that if one is motivated and actually wants to lose weight, looking at calories will make a difference. And I think it's part of the educational
experience. They're probably not in the fast food place.
And they may not be in the fast, but they may be in there. And I think it's read those labels. Then you'll know exactly where your calories are coming from. And sometimes it's shocking because there are hidden calories almost in every dish you buy.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I've had this problem with my wrist. It's happened, it's about 8 months now, and I have this pain in it, and I saw a doctor on it. He x-rayed it, said there's nothing bad with the x-ray. He also did an MRI, and he said, I lost blood supply to one of the bones from the second finger. If you were to take the hand and arm and extend it straight out and have the arm or the hand parallel to the floor, if I turn it sharp to the right, I get this shooting pain in my hand. It's about it's close down to the wrist, but a little bit above the wrist towards the fingers. It's maybe an inch in and maybe 2 inches down from the opening between the small finger and the big finger. And if I press on there, I get a pain too. And the doctor that I saw said I lost the blood supply, but he said he wanted to mobilize it. So I was down in Texas, and my sister knows a good doctor down there, and I saw him, and he said what it probably is a lack of vitamin D. So he gave me this these droplets that I could take. He said you take 8,000 units a day, and I started doing that. It was getting better. But then I was in a boating accident, and I heard it worse now, and it doesn't seem to be reacting at all to anything.
Ouch, that's interesting. 8 months. Did you do anything 8 months ago that brought this on?
Not that I'm aware of. I knew that I had tendonitis in my elbow, and that went away. And then I had that for about 3 months, and then a month later, this showed up in my wrist.
A couple of things here, first of all. Do you remember what the name was? It one of the little bones in the wrist called the scaphoid or the, you know, one of those carpal bones they're called? Did you, is that what
it was? You know, he did tell me what it was, and I tried to look up to my dad, and I didn't have it. But he said this is, There's mm-hmm. five guys in this office that I went to, and okay. he said one of them is common to have this problem. Right. The one next to it is not.
Okay, so therefore it's not this bone. It's not the navicular bone. But they saw this on an MRI scan?
Yes, they did.
Okay. And they recommended immobilization to see if the bone would heal, I assume.
The first one did, and the second doctor said, well, that would probably make it worse, so I didn't do that.
Were either of them hand surgeons or orthopods?
The one is... he's an extremity doctor. I don't know.
Extremity?
He said the option was to do exploratory surgery, and mm-hmm. I said, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I think the exploratory surgery is the thing I would put off to the end. One of the problems with bones, first of all, taking enough vitamin D, making sure you have vitamin D and 1,000 milligrams of calcium is great. That's the real issue. Making sure you have that's really sort of the bottom line. So taking the D would be helpful. But on
but
the other hand,
isn't that more of a preventive than a,
right.
than a solution?
Tom is exactly right. It's more preventive, although it may be necessary for healing of the bone. If I were you, I would try immobilization. And the reason is it sounds like you've got pain and you may have trouble later on. And when a bone doesn't heal or begins to lose its blood supply, it's actually a very serious thing in that it can lead to long-term pain. And right now, you've had some long-term pain.
Yeah.
So if I were you, I would consider immobilization. And as you can see, you've gotten two opinions. One opinion said, I think it's going to do something. One opinion said, I don't. One opinion said, we really ought to explore it and see why it's happening. To me, the most conservative answer, when you put all this together, and I like conservative answers, it's immobilize for a while and re-x-ray it in 3 weeks and see what happens.
But I'm an electrician by trade, so I'm always using my hands.
So the problem is, if you immobilize it, that might be a big problem in terms of your job.
Well, they can work around that for the 6 weeks that he wants to immobilize it for.
I would immobilize it.
Okay.
There's no doubt in my mind. I would immobilize it. I would see what happens. And the reason is there's some reason that this occurred, and it could have been an inconsequential bump that you don't know about. Taking the D is good to keep your bones strong, but I would definitely immobilize it. No doubt at all. Good luck. Let us know what happens.
Thank you very much. And you said calcium I should take also, correct?
I would take 750 to 1,000 milligrams of calcium. One Tum Extra, I think it's called, a Tum X. It's 1,000 milligrams of calcium, really easy, and most importantly, they're pink. They're pink and blue.
Okay.
So they color coordinated to your day.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We appreciate
style
the call.
Style is important, Tom.
Yes.
Style is important.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And a listener now, Zorba, in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, Dr. Zorba and Tom, I'm so pleased to be on the show. And on a recent show, you discussed the new guidelines for labeling sunscreens, and you talked about how you need to reapply them and how long they're going to last. And I apply my sunscreen every morning before I go to work, before I'm dressed. That's the easiest time to do it. And then I work inside for 4 or 5 hours before I go out to drive in the car and go for a walk and exercise and things like that. And by that time, it's the strongest sun. And I'm wondering if I'm still protected or if it's worn off by then after I've just been sitting inside for the morning.
Well, according to the new guidelines that have now been registered and will actually take force in about a little bit less than a year, the answer is no. They'll say 40 minutes and they'll say 80 minutes. That'll be it. In other words, it's 40 and 80 minutes. Now that makes a number of assumptions. First of all, it is a cream or an oil or a spray, although the sprays are not actually – they're not sure about sprays. So the sprays, I'm not sure how they're going to be labeling them, but the feds have said they're not sure how the safety of sprays because of inhalation. But anyway, they have discovered that 80 minutes is about as long as it actually lasts.
But logic,
that's outside.
But logic tells us that there's a difference between sitting in the baking sun for 80 minutes.
That's right.
And in an office working for 80 minutes as far as what effect that
might have. Exactly. And I would make an assumption that in an office, you're sitting in an office, let's assume it's air conditioned, you're not going to sweat it off. You're not going to touch your face as much. You're not going to remove it as much as at the end of 80 minutes. So I have a question for you. Do you wear makeup at all?
Just a very little bit, and it's got SPF in it as well.
So when you wear your makeup, does your makeup look the same in the afternoon when you leave the office than in the morning when you go there, or do you reapply your makeup?
No, I don't reapply it. It's pretty much the same.
So I would make an assumption from a logical sort of a common sense point of view that if the makeup is staying on there, that the sunscreen is on there too. And when the feds are doing – when the feds are looking at the 40 and 80 minutes, they're making an assumption that people are putting it on and going out in the sun.
Yeah.
Because that's what most people do. So using that, I would say, yes, you probably are protected. And you can tell if you go out and you're out in the sun for an hour or two and you come back in and your face is red. Well, come on. You know,
that's right.
The proof is in the pudding. So I think putting it on in the morning is really good because then you're in a habit. And the habit is going to make it more likely that you'll do it other than going out in the sun and saying, oh, I forgot to put on my sunscreen. So.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck to you. Keep on exercising outside. It's great, especially in Buffalo in the summer, because Buffalo in the winter, like Wisconsin in the winter, is much more difficult.
Exactly.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Time for our medical myth buster now, Zorba. Today's myth deals with a common practice most folks use when trying to save their voice, and that's whispering. Is it possibly bad to whisper when your voice is going?
When you have laryngitis, whispering is a myth that it will actually help your vocal cords. It's actually a myth. And it's one of those myths that's just been carried on for years and years and years by physicians.
You don't use your vocal cords.
Well, it turns out there was a study that was done, 2006, study that was done looking at laryngeal function for whispering versus talking. And what they did was they looked down the vocal cord through something called a fiber octave laryngoscope. Mm-hmm. So they looked at the vocal cords. They had 100 subjects who volunteered. They looked at how they squeezed their vocal cords in normal conversation. They looked at the tension. They measured it. They looked at it. And they looked at the tension on the vocal cords when people were whispering. And lo and behold, it turns out that whispering on the whole puts more stress on the vocal cords than talking.
My jaw is dropping.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your jaw is dropping. And when I actually looked at this, I thought, my goodness, my jaw is dropping, because I always said, well, when, put your voice at rest by whispering, but it doesn't put your voice at rest. The way you put your voice at rest is by not talking. And let me tell you, for me, that is impossible.
Well, save your voice and email your medical myths that you want busted. Just send them along to the show and email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
That did seem to stress my head. When you're focusing on it.
Now that you're thinking about it, of course, it does stress your vocal cords.
To the phones again, and a listener in Belleville, Illinois now. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's up?
My name is Judy, and I am 48 years old, and I have been experiencing, I guess, for the last 5 to 6 months, it seems to me like a lot of hair loss, follicle and all. And it's a big concern for me because my hair is getting really thin now. Is there anything I can do to prevent it, which probably not? Will it regrow? And can you tell me a little bit about what's going on?
Well, a number of things. First of all, anything happened to you within the last year, a major illness, trauma in your life, death in the family, anything serious psychologically or physically?
Maybe a little bit physically.
Mm-hmm. Why? What happened?
Well, I had been in a position for a dental assistant for, over 20 years, and I'd had a back injury, and I'd moved positions to a business area, which was, I think, psychologically stressful. Mm-hmm. So I guess both of those combined maybe were mental and physical strain on my body.
I mention that because sometimes an illness, a psychological stress, a physical stress can actually cause hair loss on a temporary basis, and then it can take a year before the follicles start working again. High fever will do it. There are a whole bunch of different things that can cause sudden loss of hair that then the hair then regrows. So that's one possibility. It may be that it's going to regrow on itself, and it will happen over time. The other issue is that women also have a balding problem like men do. But when they have a balding problem, it's more of a global balding problem. It's not a hair loss from the front that is typically male. It's simply a loss of follicles. And if you look at older women, in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, you'll often see it. The women, they'll do their hair, and you look at their hair, and you realize they really do have, do have a hair loss. So there is a possibility that that's that's what's going on too. Have you talked to your beautician about looking at your scalp, or have you gone to a dermatologist or a family doctor?
I haven't had anyone check it. I'm considering a dermatologist. Mm-hmm. A girl that I work with, she has eczema, and she experienced extreme hair loss eczema.
Yeah, I think I would do that, because you want to make sure, you want to rule out any dermatological problem that may be going on there that's contributing to it. And a dermatologist with a good look at your scalp is going to rule that out. But once again, it could have been from the trauma, the job change could have done it, and it might be that you're having a global hair loss. And of course, it's always an issue with hair on our head.
Okay, and can diet change anything or help it regrow?
I have never seen any evidence that diet can make a difference. So good luck to you. Let us know what happens.
Great, I sure will. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Before we leave for the week, Zorba, we have to swing by the West Lafayette, Indiana Grammar Police Station and pay a fine to Sergeant Sally. Sally writes, "My husband and I love to listen to your show. The advice is always so practical, interesting, and fun. However, on a recent show," Sally continues, "you said the specie, and you used the word specie singularly. It is never used that way unless in reference to money in coin. Example, ready to return insult in specie. Species is always used, whether in a singular or plural context. Example, what species is that? Or what species are those? Don't mean to be picky, but thought you would like to know. I couldn't let it slip by because I always give my students heck when they say it incorrectly."
That's exactly right. The grammar police are always right up there telling me what to do. I will take that into advice, and I will make sure that I use it correctly. I probably simply misspoke at that time, but it's nice to know that people are paying attention.
And no matter what species of grammar error Zorba makes, let us know by joining the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police by sending an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor and Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Ricky Friedrich and technical director Brad Bubbles Kohlberg are the two RV enthusiasts on the other side of the glass responsible for this hour. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0730Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.